Okay, we left the question last time.
Right up to the
in Shmuel Bet Perek Yud Bet. We're used to a few cases of couples in Tanakh where a man has more than one wife, but we've been the last few times discussing women who have had more than one husband. Bathsheba is married to a man who has a chance to go home to see his wife that he had not seen for some months, and he does not take the advantage to do so. I wouldn't know if that teaches me anything about his relationship with her, one way or another. He's a man of honor, his men are in battle, and he does not want to disrespect them by finding comfort with his wife while they're in such phenomenal discomfort, and he says so. But for goodness sakes, he has a good excuse. The king's telling him to go. Right? Yeah. Okay, so we thought that just meant that they, you know, maybe there's something missing. His honor for his how he does battle is more important to him than his love for his wife, which we may not understand in the 21st century, but in that time, then maybe that's just how warriors waged war.
I open a condition. Yes, both of them.
Okay, so be careful. We made sure not to fall into the pit this past year when analyzing the biblical couple to say that because Abraham talks this way to Sarah and no good husband would talk this way to his wife today, that means Abraham was not a good husband. Chas v'shalom. The Torah is often very snippety in its conversations. Right? When a man has guests and he comes to his wife and he says, "Hurry, sir, make up some cook up some of this and then bake some of that," it's no way to talk to your wife, right? So, but on the other side, it demonstrates a type of partnership between Avram and Sarah, as if though she knows it's such a common thing, and my husband loves treating strangers that, you know, that's just the way we work, you know.
Yes.
So, or that when Avraham finds out that he's about to have a child, this long-awaited for child with his wife, he doesn't even tell her, right? And for that matter, when Rivka finds out that she's bearing twins, she doesn't even tell Yitzchak about it, right? Apparently. So this is not the way we would communicate today, right? So I caution you: be careful. We there's a lot of sensitivity changes from the time of the Tanakh till our own day. One being that polygamy is quite tolerated in the time of Tanakh, and it is under the ban today, of course. So be careful with that. Okay, but I think that in the parable, now please turn with me to chapter 12 of Shmuel Bet.
Page 670.
670.
What? 670 in this stone tonight.
No, you're
Shmuel
Bet.
749.
Shmuel Bet. Oh, I'm in Shmuel Aleph. I'm sorry.
749.
Okay. Thank you. 748
All right.
48 or not?
Let's go.
Thank you.
So,
sorry.
The prophet has a difficult task. The prophet's task is to tell the king that he has sinned a grievous sin without actually saying so. It's not necessarily because he's afraid to say so. While it's definitely true at that time and for much of history afterwards, a prophet or a religious functionary would be very fearful to tell a king that he did something on this order for fear of being killed himself. You don't point your finger at the king like that, right? Off with it with his and his head and anyone else who dares to rebuke the king in this way. That's not the case in the prophet of Israel. The prophets have their way with the kings, at least until Yirmiyahu or something, you know, much later. But you know, the prophets speak to the kings, and Shmuel is not afraid to tell Shaul you're about to lose your kingdom. That's treason, right? The king should have him killed right there on the spot. Right, there's at one point when God tells Shmuel to appoint a new king, while this king still rules, Shmuel says that's going a little too far. If the king finds out that I appointed a new king while he's king, you know, any king would have the right to, right? Not just one that's his mind is demented and melancholic and paranoid. as Shaul certainly was by that point. Of course, the reader of Shmuel Aleph is treated to the irony that Shaul is right. He's paranoid for a good reason. Right? Everyone in the world in the book is telling him, why are you chasing after your son-in-law? He means you no harm. He may mean him no harm, but he certainly means to take his kingdom, right? All right, so anyway, so at this point, but I must caution you also, Nasan has an additional strike against him when approaching David at this point. Because a few chapters ago, this prophet was approached by David and said, I would like to build a house for God. Until now, God's tabernacle has been behind a curtain, right? Like in the desert. I'd like to build a house, right? Now, there's nothing in the Torah that says that tabernacle has to be in the house. It says, V'asu li mikdash v'shachanti v'socham. Make for me a holy place. It doesn't say a house. It says in Devarim, L'shichno sidrashu uvasa shama. Seek for God a place and go there. Right? So, all right, but so David says, I'd like it to be more secure. Now, when it was in Shiloh, it was also, you know, pretty much a more secure place. But this, I would like to build something grand. Can anyone tell me here, what was the prophet's immediate reaction to that request?
Yes. Good.
Yes. Go do it, David.
And then
good idea.
Overnight. And
succeed. Whatever you do, you succeed. Now go do it. And David must have slept very nicely that night. Right? And in the morning, the prophet has this very unfortunate, it's the same Nasan, has a very unfortunate task to tell David that you cannot do this. David is such a magnanimous king that he does not react negatively. Doesn't fire him as prophet. He goes, how did you not know this? What did you learn overnight? Right? And David never says it's not fair. And one other thing David does not ask in Shmuel Bet. He doesn't ask, why not? He never says why not. In fact, the prophet doesn't even tell him why not. And if I ask you in this room, why not?
This was before Bathsheba.
Yes, it was. If I asked you in this room, that's what's written in Divrei Hayamim, when the story is being told over by Shlomo. But in the original story, God, Nasan does not tell him why he can't build this house. Later he says, Dam larov shafachta, you've shed much blood. Right? Which makes Abravanel and others ask, why should that invalidate him from building the temple? True, the temple has to be built by a man of peace in times of peace. It can't even be built with metal objects, right? My son got me this amazing scissors from China. It's made of plastic and very sharp, so that's what you can use to cut your tzitzis, right? Or to cut tefillin straps. It's so sharp, it just eats right through the tefillin strap. But you can't cut tefillin straps with a knife or a scissors because metal is not supposed to touch your tefillin, nor your tzitzis, nor any mitzvah. Unless it's a knife for shechita or something like that. But if it's not called for, metal shortens life. It kills, it stabs, it takes life. Don't touch metal.
Ceramic scissors, or
plastic, yes. Anyway, the point is that the Beis HaMikdash is, the temple is a place of peace. It's built by a man whose name is peace. Shlomo, right? Yeah. But that's only in Divrei Hayamim. In the original book of Shmuel, no reason is given. The prophet apparently doesn't know why he can't do it, right? And David never asks. Now, I must tell you this. In such an amazing chiddush. I've said it over. Abravanel has such an amazing chiddush why David couldn't build the temple. And he says it has nothing to do with the wars that David fought. It's a philosophical chiddush I don't want it to eat away at my closing presentation tonight, but it's a philosophical enormity. I'll take it in a second, please. So So Abravanel says that the reason why the prophet didn't know why that David couldn't build the temple, and didn't tell him the reason why he couldn't build the temple, right, is because the prophet didn't know himself, because David hadn't done it yet. The reason why David couldn't build the temple is because it was within his mindset not to be able to fight his Yetzer Hara when he saw Bathsheba. I'll get back to that in a minute. I do have you in mind, and I will come back to you. I do very much. So here is what we did this last week. It says, there's a rich man and a poor man in your kingdom. The rich man has many wives, and he has many wives, many sheep, and he has thousands of sheep and cattle. And there's a poor man in your kingdom, and he has but one sheep, and it really tells you with a little too much, remember, too much information, remember, about how close he is with that sheep. Yes. I don't even get into it right now, but he's a little too close to that sheep, right? She sleeps with him, she eats with him, she drinks from his cup, and she eats from his plate, and it's too much. So at that point, David must have said, why are you telling me all this? Get on with the question. Here's the question. A halech, a passerby, came to the rich man, and he refused to give of his own sheep, the many that he had, to satisfy the guest that came to him. Instead, he slaughtered the one sheep belonging to the other man, the poor man, to give to the ish. Now he's ish. Same. It's all one big verse, by the way. It's a halech, passerby, then an oreach, guest, and an ish. And I believe we concluded last week by asking, who is that guest? Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. The rich man is David, the poor man is Uriah, the many sheep, David's multitude of wives, the one lone sheep is Bathsheba. Who is this guest?
The
Yetzer Hara. Now, the reason why Natan tells him you can't build the temple is because when the Halech comes to your head and tempts you, right, if that Halech, the passerby, it happens to us all the time. The Yetzer Hara grips us. We don't plan it, right? The Yetzer Hara, we're just walking along and we run it. Oh my goodness, look at that. He left his wallet right there in the open and no one's looking, right? You know, there are rules like this, that you shouldn't be alone in a room with someone else's husband or wife, right? You know, you shouldn't be alone in a room. It's called yichud. Well, you shouldn't have yichud with someone else's money either. because we shouldn't be tempted, right? All right, but you are tempted. So what did you do? So it depends what you're used to, right? If you're walking along the street and someone with indiscretion was bathing a little too close to an open window, so you walk away quickly, right? And of course, even if you didn't walk away and your Yetzer Hara quickly went from being a passerby to a guest and then to an important someone paying rent or stuck in your head already, right? And often someone just tells me about someone who's bothering him, bothering me so much. It goes, why is that person in your head and he's not even paying you rent? Right, but he's in your head. He's living in your head. Yeah. You're letting him live in your head, and he's not even paying rent. What's the matter with you? Evict him. But it's not so easy to evict an ish. It's easy to evict a halach. Yeah. Just pass by. Goodbye. I didn't have time. But the problem is that when you're a king,
you're used to getting what you want.
Used to getting what you want. Now, I must tell you that it was very crucial. I told you last week. I believe that we would end with the 31st chapter of Mishlei. Anyone without looking want to tell me what the 31st chapter of Mishlei is about?
Isn't
that Eshet
Chayil? Eshet Chayil, the woman of valor. Yes. Eshet Chayil, yes. So everybody knows the last 22 verses of Mishlei. Mm-hmm. But chapter 31 of Mishlei has a lot more than 22 verses.
Ah.
It doesn't just start Eshet Chayil on the Yimtzah. I'll get to that shortly. So, in this parable, the lone poor sheep of the poor man is very beloved of him. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So it may be the biblical text purposely being ambiguous with us about whether Uriah and Bathsheba had a good marriage or not. You see, in Hollywood, in the movie David and Bathsheba, right, that Gregory Peck made in 1951, they have a horrible marriage. He's abusive. She hasn't seen him more than two or three nights in their entire marriage. Uriah, right? Uh-huh. And I don't like that. It's not fair. Because Hollywood is making an awful, awful... It's giving an awful message. Right? Adultery is adultery. It really doesn't matter. The Bible is purposely ambiguous about the marriage of Bathsheba and Uriah. Okay? All right, but in the parable, the lone sheep is very beloved of that poor man. Right? Now, back in chapter 7, when Natan Hanavi, the prophet, has to go back on his sort of guarantee, David, yes, whatever you do succeeds. David, yes, you're going to do this. The temple will be called by your name. And then he has to come back in the morning and tell him that I'm sorry, I made a mistake, because I don't know why. As far as I know, I'm in with God. We're like this, you know. He lets me know everything, but he didn't let me know this one.
Yeah, but you told him that your son will go.
Right, right.
And that's already
right. That's okay. That's already okay. Once you say your son will do it, everybody's who's going to be jealous of that.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Yes.
Why couldn't have, let's say, King David, he wanted to build the temple. Okay, he thought he can't do it. Couldn't he have, let's say, appointed a Beis Din and donated the money to build
What he did. That's exactly what he did. There's about 20 chapters of Divrei Hayamim that show that at the end of his life, he spent some of our liturgies, of Baruch David, Behodul Hashem, all these things, prayers that David made, and collections, and the wood, and the stone, and the gems, and Shlomo had a running start.
David already arranged for all that
he
stuff?
He just didn't build it.
Oh, I didn't know.
Have you ever read Divrei Hayamim? Read Divrei Hayamim Aleph.
No.
You have to read Divrei Hayamim, yes.
You on Wednesday morning.
Yes, yes, we did that a long time ago. So that's crucial. He didn't build it, but he certainly did what you suggested he do. Yes, please.
Also there's the other instance with Nathan coming back to King David the second time with the naming of Solomon. At first he was named Jedediah. So my question is, why did the prophet come back to him and tell him to call him Solomon?
Well, remember, the child that's born has to be a man of peace. Now, what's interesting is that David already has a son, much older than Shlomo, named Avshalom. Avshalom. Who's better than me to be the next king? Right? So I've got peace in my name too. This might, you know, he of course rebels later. So Yedidya means beloved of God. Right? But the name that David gives him is Shlomo. The second name, his name Yedidya afterwards. Right? Shlomo is the original name. He takes the name Yedidya after that. Okay, so
could argue that Avshalom is peace, or Shlomo is Shalem, completion.
Mm-hmm. Huh. I'm sure Avshalom made that argument. So this is what the Brabanel says. He says that Nasan couldn't figure it out because it's something he hadn't done yet. And he's wondering, is it fair, God, to tell David you can't do it now because of something he is yet to do? And God says, listen, he's asking now to do it. I can't tell him yes, because if I tell him yes, then I won't be able to tell him no. But if he exercises his free will the day he sees Bathsheba from his rooftop, right? And he exercises his free will to go against that Halech and that Oreach and that Ish. And instead of taking another man's wife, he goes to one of his own wives. You go back to him and tell David, I have good news for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? This explains a lot of the problems of chapter 7. Right? Now, after David sinned with Bathsheba, the Gemara in a number of places, Sanhedrin, Moed Katan, Bracha says that that David feared that he wouldn't be able to build the temple, not him and not his son, because of the egregious nature of this sin. So God, after hearing his profound repentance, and repentance alone isn't enough when you deserve a punishment, to be sure, the rest of Shmuel Bet, David suffers significantly. Right? He did two terrible things. He broke up a home, and he used the sword of the Ammonite in killing the man whose home was broken. The sword shall follow you for the rest of your life, right? And your home will be broken. I remember how many children David lost after that? So when the prophet tells him this parable, David is incensed. How is it that, I mean, I don't know if anybody in this room can go back to the very first time that you read this story. Is anybody hearing this story for the first time? You all heard the story. So you know that. Come on. Because we're reading it from the outside. Mm-hmm. But when you're on the inside, you may be, you know, your mind wanders, you're sort of in and out. How could David not know that he's the guy we're talking about? He pronounces such a stiff sentence. He says, Chai Hashem, he swears, Ki ben moves ha'isha osezos.
He thought something was being brought to him, you know, to pronounce judgment on some event among his people.
But you should be so impetuous as to pronounce a death penalty for stealing a sheep? What is this, the Wild West?
How to pronounce death? He says may have to be some head and have to pronounce the death.
The king has extrajudicial power to commute the death sentence, as he will shortly, for that Tekoite woman, for her son. And to pronounce the death penalty, right? So he's, and then he does profess and demonstrate knowledge of Shmot law of Torah law when he says Uba'ad Hakeves Yishalem Arba Atayim, and for the sheep he shall pay fourfold, right? Good. He knows Torah law, but because he pronounced the death penalty. The Talmud is very good at finding mita keneged mita, measure for measure punishment. And it says, you pronounce the death penalty for stealing sheep that has the punishment of a fourfold punishment. Okay, magia lecha, we'll see what happens to your children. So they start killing each other. The very next story is, it's one son of his violating a daughter of his. Oy. I told you about the street in Gibat Zev, Rechov Tamar Ba'amnon. Crazy. The first street in Gibat Zeva Chadasha is called Rechov Tamar Va'Amnon. Who would make up such a street? That's not a couple. Tamar Yehuda, maybe, but not Tamar Va'Amnon. He's the most despicable person in the Bible. Who makes up these streets in Israel? Must be a board making up street names, you know. No, I know the neighborhoods have, you know, there's a transfer neighborhood. My son lives in a neighborhood. Every street in the whole city is the name of a prophet. Right down the block from him is one of two streets in all of Israel named Rehob Moshe Rabbeinu. And everyone wants to live on that street. I'm going to get my mail at 613 Moshe Rabbeinu. So anyway, so Rehob Tamar Ma'amnon is despicable. This is the Nasan's difficulty of after messing up the temple situation. So the Medrash says Nasan came to him and said, David, you're not going to lose the temple. Not only that, not only will your son build the temple, her son will build the temple, Bathsheba's son. So chapter 31 of Sefer Mishle, with which we'll close our year-long program of couples in the Bible. I'm still looking to hear some of your thoughts about what we can do next year. If you want a particular book, or again, a program, or a topics. Okay, so chapter 31 of Mishle. Let's turn to it, please.
614, yes.
What page?
1614.
Thank you. It's right after Tehillim. Recently, I was in the Constitutional Museum in Philadelphia. Yes, it's the Museum of the Constitution. It's in Philadelphia. And the guard at the front desk is named Lemuel. L-E-M-U-E-L. So I said, I told him, I said, oh, look at that. Proverbs 31. He goes, you're the first person that ever came up to tell me where my name comes from. Everybody always asks me, what kind of crazy name is Lemuel? Lemuel is, according to our sages, another name for Shmuel. Shlomo, I'm sorry. Shlomo. And it starts off, Divrei Lemuel, a man named Lemuel, whose mother rebuked him, Asher Yisarto Imo. Yisratu Imo. He's king, right? She speaks to him, you're king of kings, you're king of many other kings. You're everyone acknowledges your majesty. Remember the queen of Sheba who came from far to hear about all the rumors about how great Shlomo HaMelech was, right? So, Lemuel's mother rebukes him on two scores, two particular things that can take down your kingdom. Be careful, my son. You are king of a vast, vast kingdom, and you have conquered many lands. But if you give in yourself to what I would like to generally call abuse of substance, whatever it may be, food or drink, or that you're not in control of what you consume. And on this we can, if we have a biblical broad license, it could mean conspicuous consumption. It could be the cars we drive, or the clothes we wear, or the domiciles we build for ourselves. But if you conspicuously consume, my son, it will destroy your kingdom. And then she says, and watch your sexual desire. That can destroy a king just the same. And he is so pleased and thrilled with this advice, although in reality, towards the end of Shlomo's life, he did not take this advice. The gaudy ostentation of his kingdom at the end of his days is grotesque, to the point of the exaggeration of the biblical author telling us that silver was cast out into the street because it wasn't gold. You just found silver in the street. Oh, it's a silver cup. Oh, who needs this? Yeah, please. You give me a silver cup for a gift? What, are you crazy? Get out of my house. Right? So he did, it looks like the advice was kept in the breach, one might presume. But in the way this book at least ends, is that Lemuel is actually every one of us. It's anybody who has learned the first 30 chapters of Sefer Mishlei. Because the book of Proverbs is the first great book of Musar. Right? Is there a good English translation of Musar? It's just M-U-S-S-A-R. It's how to, you know, Socrates gives good Musar. But
yeah, man, you can say.
Right? There was a movement called the Musar Movement in the 19th century that said, Yisrael Salanter, that said that the study of rigorous law, bless you, of rigorous law does not serve us if it does not refine us into being good people, right? And then what, how do you define good people? Can you put me in the water, please? Obviously, Perkei Avos, Mesilas Yesharim, Darkei Tshuva, you know, Archos Tzadikim, you know, there are all kinds of books that have been written over the years to try to codify what's written in Sefer Mishlei. But all those books are Mishlei. Have you ever gone to a place called Hers? You ever see Hers? H-E-R-R-S. It's a potato chip factory in Pennsylvania.
I've heard of it.
You should definitely go there.
Oh, yeah?
First of all, most of the products are kosher. So they take you on a tour, like it's like the Hershey tour. You know, you go to see how they make all the chocolates. So they take you to it's like a 2-hour tour. It's amazing, and they show you how they make all their products. And at the end, they give you a big basket. And if you say you're kosher, they'll make sure it's only kosher products in your basket. Big basket is like $30-$40 worth of Hers products in that basket.
Mm.
Wow!
Right, you pay to get in, of course, but
there's no in Israel. Success.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't believe so.
Tax deduction.
So why am I telling you this? In that basket is a little book that says Hers Proverbs. And I see it's beautiful Proverbs, wonderful thing. So at the end I see, you know what? It's 31 chapters. Why would hers have a book of Proverbs with 31 chapters? It was just such a phenomenal reiteration of the book of Proverbs.
Really? In,
you know, like, forbidden fruit tastes sweeter, you know, spare the rod and spoil the child. So it's almost like that. In Mishlei, it's stolen water is sweeter. I like forbidden fruit better, but stolen water, mayim genuvim yim taku. So it's all of Mishlei put into a modern tongue. It's really quite accessible, and some of it is good commentary. Anyway, at the end, it has the same thing. What you have is the first 9 verses of chapter 31 is this woman rebuking her child because she knows him better than anybody. Who knows you better than your mother, right? Mm-hmm. That's why on the most important day of the year, to guarantee a good year for the next year, you want to have something that sounds like your mother crying for you. Right? I'm talking, of course, about the shofar, right? Yes. Mara says it's supposed to sound like crying. So he is so thankful for her good advice. At the time, he sings Eish Yisrael for her. So here's an important thing. When you're singing Eish Yisrael on Shabbos, you're not singing for your wife, you're singing for your mother. So it's not just for a man, for his wife. Everyone says, come on, sing for me, the new bride says. No, he teaches the children to sing. But okay, but anyway, that's just a technicality.
That's the first verse. Shema b'nei Musar
Avichachom. Mm-hmm. Torah Simecha. Right. So this is the man who teaches us this important lesson. It's a problem. Can a man who didn't himself learn these lessons teach it to us? When he wrote them, he was learning them. I mean, you're right. I probably wouldn't mind, having a dentist take care of my root canal, but he has no teeth left himself. his dentures, or a man who is when he takes that scalpel, he is just an artist with heart surgery. But you come into his office for an appointment, and he's got a half-eaten pastrami sandwich. He's got an ashtray filled with cigarettes. He's 75 pounds overweight, and he's got a liquor cabinet in the corner there with all the scotches and everything. And you see his lifestyle does not seem to vouchsafe the good health for a heart that we know about these days. I've seen very good. Marriage therapists who they're very good at it because they've been married 4 or 5 different times themselves. You know? So yep, he has great advice for other people. So in all those examples, I don't care if he doesn't incorporate the advice to himself. If he can help me with my problem, I'll go to see him. But nobody wants to hear Musar from an immoral person. Don't tell me Musar if you're not living it. And Musar goes in so many different directions, right? So, I certainly don't pass myself off as the best representative of the couple, but I do feel I'm very happily married. And this time my wife isn't even here, so she usually comes to this year, but I don't know why she's... Oh, no, she's at a Shidduch committee meeting tonight. That's right. She's trying to get other people married. But the point is that the messages we need to learn about anything in life are here not only through our mitzvahs but our narratives. Okay, I think if we go through a list of commentary and let me just run a few off. When Yitzchak gets married, it says Vayhi Yitzchak ben Arbeim Shana bekachto es Rivka. He was 40 years old in his taking of Rivka. So the Baal HaTorim asks, what kind of Hebrew is that? What is Bekachto? You know, the word appears only one other time in the whole Bible. So this is why I'm saying the Baal HaTorim, because the Baal HaTorim loves to do this. When the word appears only twice, he connects those two words and they're Right? So where else does the word Bekachto appear? Hmm. You certainly can get 100 on the exam if you get this. When Yirmiyahu was carried off into captivity in chains at the end of Yirmiyahu by his own people, it says they carried him off Bekachto to the base of Sohar, to the jail. So the Baal HaTurim says, why is Bekachto called getting married and being carried off into captivity? So he says the following. He says, marriage frees us from the bondage of our singlehood.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Of our singlehood. You are a slave to yourself and your own needs. Now your marriage will free you so that you now can be concerned with someone else's needs. Now, of course, that is counterintuitive to what our society teaches us today, certainly in the me generation. But right. But look, this is what we are. We are born not bad or evil, chas v'shalom. Yetzer leva adam ra min rav means we're born selfish. Of course, we're the center of our own universe for a good 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I don't know how many years. Let the child experts tell us how long. Mm-hmm. And then we start to realize that there are other people out there, maybe I even have a younger sibling coming along, and good parents start to teach, you know, how to share, and, you know, because, but left unattended, that child grabbed a toy and got to play with it. So I'll grab a toy now because I want to play with it.
If they're not, and I'm not sharing.
Okay, if we don't have good teachers or good parents, then they'll continue to learn that way and grow and grow and grow and become more and more and more selfish and become have more creative ways to find selfishness. But what being a couple affords us is that we have an Ezer Kenegdo, someone who helps us to learn to find the giving nature within us. Right? The purpose of Al Kenya Azovishet Avivet Imabadabak Bishtobasar Chod, Torah says, now it's time to leave your parents and to cling to another one, become one with them, and teach each other how to be giving. Because what you're going to produce needs you more than any other species on this planet. Got that?
Right.
Any other. There's none other that needs it's the ones who bear them more than we do. We wouldn't last the first 2 days without it. And some species a week, 2 weeks, they have 3 weeks, they have to go, goodbye, you're on your own, you've got to catch your own fish, you've got to catch your own birds, get your own insects, you know. Right? A few weeks, you know, a couple of months, 2 months later. Right? And you know, we need our parents probably our whole lives. Right? And it's our mitzvah to honor them, not only as long as we're alive, they're alive, but as long as we're alive. So that's the biblical story is here to tell us, not just fanciful stories, but for us to learn, look, from their good points, but also sometimes their mistakes. Right? The Ramban tells us that Avraham made a mistake with some particular behavior with respect to Sarah. Right? Yes.
In the movie Luther, talking about Martin Luther, his spiritual father tells him, "We learn best, we teach best the things we need to learn most, or we can teach what it is that we need to learn."
Okay, it sounds like the Talmudic discourse that says, "I learn a lot from my teachers and more from my colleagues, but the most from my students." So yes, sounds like something like that. All right, so that's what we do with our couples, and so I thank you for being here all year. We started with Adam and Eve, and I was thinking of finishing like with Mashiach and Mashiach's wife, or something like that. Not a whole lot written on that, but Mashiach will be married.
Really?
That's for sure. Yeah, because he's a regular person. Why would you want him to be a bacher?
Yeah, somebody would have trouble with it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, he's good, but you know, I thought he could do better.
I understand that. Okay, so I would like to take some thoughts about next year. I would like to hear your ideas. Yes.
Iyov or Divrei Yamim.
Iyov Divrei Yamim. Okay, Divrei Yamim we did. We did a few years ago. Iyov is just you know, it has to be more upbeat than that. It's just too. I'd love to do Eve. I've just taught it in college recently, a couple of years ago, but it's yeah, what
constantly.
What? Tehillim. That's an interesting thought. We also did that some years back. We did Daniel.
We just did Yemiya.
Daniel.
Oh, Daniel.
Daniel, yeah. Daniel also will have a language barrier because it's mostly in Aramaic. But okay, we could do the English one.
What is Aramaic?
Daniel is Aramaic. Are there any topics you'd like to see done? We've done couples, we've done...
Ezra and Nehemiah.
Yeah, maybe linguistically difficult.
What about the differences between Divrei HaYamim and the other narrative?
When we did Divrei HaYamim, we did that. There were books dedicated to that point. Parents and Children, now that we did couples. Parents and Children, yes, we could do that. Mothers and Daughters. We could do Mothers-in-Law and Daughters-in-Law. No, I like a topic where we can be all over the place. You know? Yeah. Yes, but let's get.
Or perhaps if we could choose like a book from the Chumash, like start let's say Bereshit and then follow through.
Mm-hmm.
And go
yeah,
chapter
people
by
go to
chapter.
Parsha Shiurim, you know, they want this to be something that's you know gets out there.
Yeshaya, you did a few years ago.
Kohelis, that's a great thought, but I think that runs into Eov's problem. Okay, if anyone wants to, you know, drop in my suggestion box, I'd be very happy to please to accept those. I like the idea of parents and children, and that looks like we can do how children start to behave like parents, like Cain behaves like Adam. I think there's something interesting there.
What day are you leaving?